From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. On Friday, State Parks Director Ruth Coleman resigned in the wake of revelations that her department failed to report a $54 million surplus. Donors and advocates who have helped save 70 state parks from closure in recent months say they feel shocked and betrayed. We'll discuss the revelations, what will the unexpected money and the scandal mean for the future of California state parks. Forum is next. We invite you to join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. California State Parks Director Ruth Coleman, director since 2003, resigned on Friday, and her next in command was fired when it was discovered that the department had for a dozen years not revealed a surplus of $54 million. The Sacramento Bee, which broke the story, also disclosed that a state park deputy director was involved in a secret employee buyout program that cost the state over $271,000. All of this occurred while budget cuts threatened to shut the parks down, rallying strong support from citizens and advocates, many of whom feel shock and outrage in the wake of these recent revelations. Investigations have begun by the Attorney General's Office and the Department of Finance. Meanwhile, Governor Jerry Brown has appointed Janelle Bellin, deputy director, as interim director. And we want to focus in this hour on these recent revelations. How and why did all this occur? And what about the effects, especially on Governor Brown's ballot tax measure? We want to first go to Sacramento and welcome Matt Weiser, who actually broke this story, who's with us by phone and is an environmental reporter for the Sacramento Bee. Welcome, Matt Weiser.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Let's go to the beginning of this. At this point, the motives, I guess, are unclear, but this was discovered by just going to public records?
Well, I started hearing rumors about this months ago from disgruntled employees of the department, essentially, and it was hard to get to the bottom of this, and there are numerous moving parts to it. The first piece of it that I was able to pin down was the issue of the vacation buyouts, which was alarming in itself, but involved a comparatively small amount of money. And at the same time, I began asking about the rumors I'd heard about this much larger surplus. This was about a week or 2 weeks ago. And so at that time, the department told me that it didn't know anything about it, wasn't really responding to my requests for information, and I ended up putting in a Public Records Act request to get to the bottom of it. That request is still pending, and meanwhile, the administration came out and announced that they had discovered this surplus.
And we're talking about $20.3 million from Parks and Recreation Fund and $33.5 million from the Vehicle Highway Fund. Are those monies linked to, or do we know if they're linked to the vacation buyouts money, which, as you say, is much smaller in amount, but how are they connected, or are they connected?
Well, we're not sure yet, but they may be linked in the sense that the same employees knew about it, knew about both events, and essentially kept quiet about it for some time.
Well, the name that keeps surfacing is Manuel Lopez, Manuel Thomas Lopez, who was a deputy director. In fact, his name, as I understand it, was redacted from the files.
Well, yes, the department released to me an attorney general's report and an internal audit that they did on the vacation buyout, and because of personnel confidentiality laws, they're allowed to redact names, and they did that in those documents. They redacted all the names. There were a lot of names in those reports of people who participated in the buyout or had something to do with it, carrying it out. His name was redacted, but a number of sources on the record told me that it was he who engineered it, essentially. He was the, until...
He was demoted, right, and resigned from his position.
Right. Until last October, he was the Deputy Director of Administrative Services at the department, which put him in charge of everything financial and personnel-related, essentially. And So he was demoted in October, and then he resigned in May. So he was in a position to be involved in all these things.
And he got 20% of his pay in this surplus pay, which was amounted to about $20,000. Is it likely that he or others are facing prosecution here?
Well, in the Attorney General's report, one of the things that they asked for was an evaluation of, as to whether there were criminal charges that might be possible, and they concluded that that was not possible. I think it remains to be seen whether that occurs, because, you know, now we know there was a lot more going on.
But there's not supposed to be a buyout, it's my understanding, without approval of the California Department of Human Resources. That's required by law.
That's required by law, correct. State law allows only the Department of Human Resources to approve these kinds of buyouts. They did not approve this one, and in fact, they have not approved any since 2007 because of the state's budget position.
And normal budgetary procedures require reporting to finance and state controller. Is that not also the case?
Right. In the case of the surplus, the $54 million surplus that was discovered, it looks like what occurred is that the Parks Department did not accurately report the amount of money in these funds. The upside to this is that the money's there. It wasn't misused, as far as we know. It wasn't embezzled. It just sat there because the department didn't accurately report it to the Department of Finance.
Yeah, Matt Weiser with us by phone, who broke the story that we're talking about here. It has to do with a surplus of money amounting to about $54 million that we haven't known about for a dozen years, when the parks were under severe threat and there were people who were rallying to try to save the parks. And Elizabeth Goldstein is here with us in studio. She's president of the California State Parks Foundation. Welcome, Elizabeth. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I imagine words can't express what you must be feeling in the wake of this. Came as a pretty outrageous kind of shock.
Absolutely. There are, as you say, no words really to describe this. I mean, I think we all feel a little kicked in the stomach, frankly. It is disturbing in the context of all the people across the parks community, all across the state, who've just been working tirelessly, really, since the park closure plan was divulged last May. So that would be May 2011, to trying to find solutions to keeping these places open.
As you know, we did a lot of programs on this, and we had a lot of citizens who were deeply concerned, committed, involved, as you saw firsthand. But isn't this good news on the one hand? I mean, there's money that wasn't there, and you have deferred maintenance costs that are sky high.
Well, I'm not even sure I can say that's a silver lining to this dark cloud. It's sort of a gray lining to this dark cloud. But yes, the money is sitting there, and we're certainly hopeful that the legislature, who Secretary Laird has referred the money to, so to speak, will think about reinvesting this money in this crisis, as frankly it should have been invested all along. And that's the thing that's most shocking.
Well, what do you think about the fact that Ruth Coleman resigned? I mean, she said she's taking one for the team. A lot of this occurred before she came into office. In fact, we have a cut, and let's hear it before I get a response from you. This is from the California Report.
I wish people would have told me and that this wouldn't happen, but, you know, you have to take responsibility for how things transpire, and so I guess it's better not to go out with any kind of sense of bitterness. I just think that I'm disappointed in them, no question about it. I always like to operate with the utmost integrity and transparency, and that's sort of been what I've been wanting to do, and I just think that right now the right time is for me to move on and take this one for the team.
That's Ruth Coleman, who did resign from her position, talking to California Report and our own Scott Schaefer. And Elizabeth Goldstein, some thoughts on that? Some would say maybe she shouldn't have taken one for the team. Wasn't her responsibility? It happened before she came on board.
Well, that may be the case, and we certainly have had a long, productive working relationship with Director Coleman. I think it probably was the right thing to step down because I think that there's going to be need to be investigations, as Matt has indicated earlier, to really figure out what happened here. I mean, I think we still don't really know.
Not only what happened, but why.
Yeah, why is the huge question for me. I mean, I do think we know what. We don't know who yet, but we don't know why. It's kind of bewildering. And I think that that's the truth of the matter, is that it's going to take maybe months to really figure out the who and the why.
Any light you can shed on that, Matt Weiser?
Well, I wish I could say yes. The why and the how are the big questions for sure, and it may take months to get to the bottom of that. What I can say is that I've heard from a number of department employees who, in recent months, who have been unhappy with the working climate at Parks headquarters for a variety of reasons. Many of them felt that when they would raise concerns about the conduct of business in the department, they were not only not listened to, but they were told to keep their mouth shut. It's discouraging to hear stuff like that and then to learn that all these things were going on. So in that sense, I think what we're seeing the administration do in recent days is a house cleaning, essentially. There's been a number of other personnel changes at high levels in the Parks headquarters that may be a good thing in the long run.
Well, there's also a crisis of confidence that's followed on the heels of this. There are legislators from both sides of the political aisle talking about auditing everything, betrayals of public trust, necessary action. In fact, there's a quarter-cent tax increase in Sonoma that's been halted now because of essentially these revelations. How do you think this might affect, maybe I'm putting you out on a limb here, Matt, but how do you think this might affect Governor Brown's ballot measure for a tax raise?
Well, I've not been covering the issues around the ballot measure, but clearly this is not a good thing for that. Voters are going to be even more skeptical about the ability of state government to be responsible with its money as a result of this park scandal, and unfortunately, they're going to look, that skepticism is going to cloud their thinking when it comes to the tax measure as well.
Well, there also have been, I believe, an expansion of park staff over the past decade by over 20%, Elizabeth Goldstein, and savings from staff vacancies.
Well, there has been actually a decrease in general fund support for California state parks of close to a third of their budget, 33% of their budget, in general fund allocations over the last years. They are carrying huge numbers of vacancies, no question about that. I can't tell you exactly about the staff count because I don't have those figures at the ready. But there's been a decline of from approximately $150 million worth of general fund support for state parks to about $99 million this fiscal year.
I'm going to open the phone lines now. I know there are many people who have, strong feelings about this, who were involved in the Save the Parks in their different areas, programs that were launched. And you may want to weigh in here, of course, not only on your feelings about this, but there are many questions that still loom over the revelations that came out. And if you'd like to join us, I'd like to offer that opportunity for you to do so now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we invite you to join the program with any comments or questions you might have, and you can do that toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email your thoughts to us or feelings, forum@kqed.org, or post them on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, or going to our Facebook page. A number of ways to communicate with us your concern. And do you think that this will, or in your mind, should it affect voting, your vote, perhaps, on Governor Brown's tax measure on the ballot, a big question that looms as a result of this. I want to bring Bob Berman into the discussion. He's vice president of the Benicia State Parks Association. And Bob Berman, just getting a perspective locally in Benicia and the attempt to save parks over there, what's been the fallout from this?
Well, the fallout is considerable. The Benicia State Parks Association, we've been working for the last 14 months to try to protect the two. We have two state parks in Benicia, both the Benicia Capital State Historic Park and the Benicia State Recreation Area. And we've been working since, as Elizabeth mentioned, in May 2011 when the announcement first came out that both of the state parks were scheduled for closure. As a nonprofit, we've been working in the community, putting together plans, working together with folks, raising money. And I think it definitely results in a significant lack of confidence in state parks in terms of what they've been telling us about the situation, what the real situation is in terms of how much money is available to keep parks open and operating, and then what we continue to tell our members who've gone out of the way to donate money, to donate time to keep these facilities operating.
Would the word betrayal be too strong?
Well, I think there is a certain feeling of betrayal. I mean, there's certainly, as others have mentioned, I think we all have been, you know, initially shocked and disappointed to find out that so much work that we've been doing for the past 14 months possibly could have been avoided because there is this pot of money that's available that could have taken care of the specific issues in Benicia in regards to the two state parks.
Well, we were told that 70 parks faced closing, and certainly citizens rallied, and, you know, I heard a lot of it in terms of the response here on the air when we did programs on it. And now there's, of course, calling out for accountability and transparency. And Elizabeth Goldstein, are those things viable?
Oh, I think they're absolutely essential now. I mean, I think the new administration, both the people who are stepping in on a temporary basis and ultimately whoever's the new director of the department, has to create a culture of openness and transparency amongst the department, its partners, and obviously, most importantly, the public. As Bob has indicated, the dismay that's happening all over the state, funders who sort of feel like they've been drawn in without a real cause, those are things which it's going to take a really long time to clear up. But I think that there are steps that government broadly, the resources agency, state parks, and other agencies can do to help get us through that. I mean, obviously, we've already talked about the need for a thorough audit here that really gets to the bottom of what happened and why and whether there's anything else. Obviously, this question about what happens with these found funds and whether or not they're applied both on the state parks, keeping parks open side, but also there's OHV money here, off-highway vehicle money, whether that goes back into the fund. Those are in the hands of the legislature, and we hope they'll do the right thing in terms of keeping those funds, which were and should have been dedicated to state parks for the purpose that they were originally intended. That will be an important show of faith to the broad community.
Which in both cases are public money.
Right, absolutely. I mean, clearly there needs some special oversight for that money, and whether that comes from the Park and Recreation Commission and perhaps a newly beefed up and new responsibilities for the Park and Recreation Commission to oversee this special pot and how it gets allocated and used. I do think there are steps that can be taken. I think the underlying issue here, though, is that even if this money is applied back to state parks and the jury is way out about what the legislature is going to do in that regard, the underlying crisis here for state parks is not fundamentally changed. The department still has lost 33% of their general fund. They've still got a $1.3 billion deferred maintenance backlog. The question is how in this moment when, you know, we're all stunned by this lack of accountability, do we all move forward to refocus on that problem and make sure that Californians are able to access their state parks for the next generation and the generation after that?
Well, I'm certain we'll hear from our listeners on that score as well as others in raising this whole question and a number of questions related to it. Frank, you're our first caller. Join us, please.
Hi. I have a question for Matt. I understand it's a little early in the circus, but do you have any tidbits on how, as an accounting matter, the department managed to conceal sums on the order of 30 to 50% of their budget? I'm thinking in the question of, don't they close their books out even on an annual basis to say, well, gee, where did this $20 million come from?
Yeah, Matt Weiser.
Well, that's a good question, and it goes to something that's really alarming about all this. The way that it happened, apparently, is that each state department has a duty to report to the Department of Finance the actual balance of its operating funds. And in this case, the Parks and Recreation Department didn't do that. It held money back, and it reported something else to the Department of Finance. And the Department of Finance apparently never verified how much was really in the fund. And apparently, it's in the habit of not verifying other funds. So this situation may exist in many other funds at many other departments in state government, and the audit that has begun of parks is going to look at other departments as well. There was a breakdown of good faith here, apparently.
Let me thank Frank for the caller, and I want to actually get your response too, Matt, to an email talking about breakdown of trust in all. A listener named Lorraine writes, no one could find information about which parks should be closed. When asked about the meeting to make the decision, the response I heard was that the minutes from this meeting were destroyed. In my opinion, this should have been a heads up. Something unusual was going on at that time and should have been investigated. There seems to have been clandestine things going on. Does that ring true to you, Matt Weiser?
Well, I covered a assembly hearing on this issue last year, in which this all came out. And it's true that it was said at this hearing that there was a group of high-level parks managers that sat around and decided which parks to close. They didn't keep any notes or minutes, and whatever notes that did get taken in that meeting were, in fact, destroyed. That's what they said at the hearing.
Let me ask Elizabeth Goldstein, how could that take place? Or do you know why that took place? Any glimmering?
I have no glimmering of that at all. I do think that this entire situation, the was as much the closing of state parks is really what I'm referring to, caused enormous turmoil and chaos inside the agency itself. And I have no idea whether this was a repercussion of that, but obviously, from a public point of view, there needs to be transparency around major policy decisions of this magnitude.
Here's another
Michael,
listener. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Bob Brewer. If I can just add, this has been one of the issues that has been very frustrating to those of us at the local areas, not getting good information from state parks in terms of what the future is. We've never been clearly told what kind of services would be reduced, when parks would close, how much operating hours would happen. And it's been very frustrating for us to put together a local plan without getting real clear direction from state parks personnel.
And Bob Berman is vice president of Benicia State Parks Association, and we will continue. In fact, let me just read another email here from Ron, who says, if there ever was an agency in need of a house cleaning at the top, the Department of Parks is it. I hope the fallout includes a dozen more resignations and sackings. And driving around the West looking at the operation of parks in other states, I'm constantly astonished at how much better managed they are. Better facilities, better information, better prices, better activities, better hours, better access. Talk to Cal Park Rangers confidentially and they'll tell you of a dysfunctional internal culture characterized by management paranoia, favoritism, secrecy, and punitive actions. That culture has to be rooted out. It would be my fond hope that Jerry Brown and John Laird go on a national search outside the agency for Coleman's successor and try to recruit the best damn parks manager from other states or from the National Park Service, which is particularly deep in really good management talent. Good deal of indignation, and you can register yours. In fact, we'd like to hear from you. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page or our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. More when we return from you. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum on KQED Radio. I'm Michael Krasny, and the head of State Parks, Ruth Coleman, resigned in the wake of revelations that the department had failed to report a $54 million surplus. Donors and advocates who have helped save 70 state parks from closure in recent months say they feel shocked and betrayed, and Forum is discussing this hour the revelations and what the unexpected money and the scandal may mean for the future of state parks. Elizabeth Goldstein here with us in studio as president of California State Parks, and with us by phone is Bob Berman, vice president of Benicia State Parks Association, and Matt Weiser, who broke this story, an environmental reporter for the Sacramento Bee. I'm going to go to more calls, but reactions on our Facebook page. Andy says, in short, found money good, but the fact that you could both lose and hide that much over so many years and multiple administrations is a frightening statement about the amount and effectiveness of financial oversight for the state as a whole, not just parks and rec. And another listener writes, I can only imagine how much money we could find if we audited all government agencies. In such hard economic times, money isn't just disappearing. Somebody is getting very rich. And another listener on our Facebook page, Tinyaville, writes, Annadel could use some attention and most of the coastline. And Mike says, California, on Facebook page, California is saved. Just think how much the prison chief has squirreled away. Oy. And the public has lots of logistical questions. Were these funds unencumbered? It's my understanding that unused funds are liquidated if unused after three fiscal years. How do you hide $54 million from the Department of Finance? Matt Weiss, you want to handle that or give us some sense of how do you hide $54 million from the DOF?
Well, again, it was simply that the department wasn't reporting the accurate contents of that fund up the chain of state government to the Department of Finance. Now, what's interesting about this is that there are sort of two arms of government that look at money. The other is the controller's office, and the controller had a separate set of books that appears to have had a more accurate total of what was really in these funds. However, it's not clear to what extent the controller and finance talk to each other to reconcile these funds, and it looks like in this case, finance didn't look at the totals that were compiled by the controller in order to figure out what was really there.
Well, Ken in Livermore says, is this a matter of possible corruption and theft or a matter of incompetence? That remains maybe one of the big questions that needs to be answered. But some comments about Ruth Coleman. Director Coleman, J. Michael writes, comments, she is taking one for the team as a joke. Directors get paid a lot of money to know what is happening. She can't claim it happened before she got there or someone else working for her did it. As a taxpayer, I expect her to have her hands on the wheel and know what she is doing. She should resign because she is culpable and leaves with unclean hands. She should divulge immediately why she had these funds sitting around. Another listener, Joan, says, I'm a state employee in a sister agency of State Parks and have worked with Ruth Coleman over the years. I have a lot of respect for her. My big fear is that this scandal will further erode public confidence in government agencies. So disheartening, as the services we offer are vitally important and hard to see how we'll climb back into public favor after this. Before we go back to our callers, a question for you, Bob Berman, again on our Facebook page. Lori asks, how does this impact the park closings? My town, Benicia, has been trying to work for months with the State Parks Department to keep our two parks open. One is the old California State Capitol building. Latest is that the city of Benicia would give $15,000 to the state just to keep two toilets and trash pickup going. What a travesty that we have to beg for trash pickup from state funds.
Well, I agree. This sounds like a Benicia resident. We've been working together with the city of Benicia to try to keep open the two parks, the State Historic Park and the State Recreation Area. Originally, the city of Benicia had made a proposal to the state for some maintenance work at the State Recreation Area, and they had actually requested, the city had requested a payment from the state of $77,000 to pay for those services. And the state said it did not have revenues available to make a payment of $77,000. So certainly in light of what we've learned now, not just the $53 million, but also the payout of the vacation periods, the $77,000 pales in comparison to that money. But since then, the city is now working with the state to do a different type of an agreement where the city would simply make a payment of $15,000 to the state, and the state would provide some water for the water fountains, some trash pickup, and some maintenance of restrooms. It's a minimal effort, but it's at least an attempt to keep the Benicia State Recreation Area open and available for use.
Elizabeth Goldstein wanted to add something here.
Yeah, I think it's important to know that obviously until we know what's going to happen with these funds, we don't know whether the state actually is going to, meaning state parks, is actually going to have these resources to apply to these closing parks. So we may or may not be in a situation that we were in 2 weeks ago, where all these organizations need to step up in just the way they are doing. But I think the other thing that I wanted to share with people is that the public is that, you know, all of us who've been raising funds that are either going directly to the department or going to other nonprofit organizations to actually operate parks, all of those funds are actually under contract obligations on the part of the department or the nonprofit. So those funds are actually being watched really carefully. So I think it's really important, you know, whatever we think about what's going on with the state's money, to recognize that the donor money that's being developed here and has been being developed for the year is being very carefully stewarded to make sure that it's going to the right places and being used in the right way. And if it doesn't need to be used here, there's no question that my organization and all the organizations like Bob's across the state are just not going to apply it, and we'll be talking to our donors about what to do with it, whether it's to be returned or whatever.
Right, let me bring our callers on, and we go to Point Reyes. Tom, you're on.
Thank you. I want to say kudos to Mark Weiser, because what would we do without newspapers, which sadly...
It's Matt Weiser, but
Matt,
that's...
Okay. Oh, excuse me, Matt, yes. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. And thank you for breaking this story. It seems like you put a little pressure on people. But I think the bigger picture is here is the California state government is by far the biggest state government in the country, and it seems to be trying to operate still like the state governments of places like Montana or Nevada that have great state park systems, as one of the callers mentioned. And so it's part of a bigger picture. My comment is, couldn't we... have more transparency and accountability if we devolved a lot of these state parks, which are very local in their functions, to local governments and just break up the system, because it obviously is overly bureaucratized and bloated, and there's a lot of truly it is a kind of corruption when people say take one for the team. That means they care more about their team of fellow employees, and it's true, there's a lot of solidarity in all these organizations, then they care about the people who they're supposed to serve and pay for the whole thing, the taxpayers of California.
Let me go to the heart of your question, Tom, and I thank you for it. Elizabeth Goldstein, what about, as he puts it, devolving more into the local?
Well, the state park system is actually managed in part with local partners already in many, many, many places in the state. And in this particular crisis, the one we thought we had 2 weeks ago, there were other local governments that indeed were stepping up. The one
way there was some criticism, by the way, of those contractual details on partnerships that came from a number of Republican Assembly members.
Yes, that's true. I think those vary a lot, and there's lots of work to be done to improve those, but they are fundamentally a workable proposition, an approach that I think works. I do want to disagree with a caller about one thing, though. I mean, the state park system is used in many ways very regionally, but some of the assets in our state park system are nationally and internationally important. There's a reason that the National Park Service is partnering in the Redwoods with state parks, and that is that a lot of the protection of redwood assets in the state of California is in the state park system. That's a nationally and internationally recognized resource. So I do think we have to, in this moment, stay focused on what the resources and the people of California really need to make this a great state park system. And that is fundamentally the most important question.
Let me go to another caller, Jeff, who's raising another fundamentally important question. Jeff, join us.
Hey, you guys, I appreciate the topic. My question is, if somebody embezzled $54 million or they were lining their pockets or something, okay, that's the problem, but they just took the money and they sat on it. Like, who does that? I don't understand, like, I want to hire them for my company and save me $54 million and give it back to me at the end of the year. Like, I don't understand who does that. You take money and you just sit on it. Any thoughts on that? Like, what was the point? What was the purpose?
Well, Matt Weiser, let me go back to you. We're still getting this question about incompetence or malfeasance, and obviously we don't know, but what do we know on that?
Well, very little, unfortunately, but there is some speculation. And keep in mind, this apparently began 12 years ago under a different park system director or a different governor. There's speculation that this began as a way, possibly as a way to create a reserve fund.
Like a rainy day fund.
A rainy day fund, yeah. Or possibly, you know, it was one person's internal way of preventing money from being siphoned from parks into the general fund, and it just became institutionalized at the department. This is just speculation again, but in any case, it continued for 12 years, and we can presume that this pot of hidden money just kept growing, and yet it was never spent, possibly because others at the department knew that it would be discovered and somebody would get in trouble. Again, this is just speculation. Another thing to keep in mind is that due to financial troubles at the larger state level, the Parks Department increased the fees that it charges the public to use the parks several times during that 12-year period, pretty substantially in at least one instance. And this fund, its purpose is to collect user fees from the parks, you know, visitor fees, camping fees. So the rate at which it accumulated money also increased over time, presumably.
And Matt, I know you have to leave us in a moment, but I have one more question for you before you do. And I also want to let listeners know that you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 if you have questions or comments. One of our listeners, Mark, asked, most of the concealed funds are in the off-highway vehicle fund, which is wholly funded by off-highway park users. Are these funds available to the general fund, to the state park system generally, restricted to off-highway park maintenance and development?
Well, that's a controversial subject. I've written about that in the past. There was a legal determination last year, I believe, which concluded that the OHV money can, in fact, be used in the non-OHV parks, particularly if it's used to maintain roads in those parks. The OHV community is unhappy about that, understandably, because they view that money as dedicated to opening and improving off-highway vehicle recreation parks. So for the moment, I believe the legislature in this last budget cycle took some money out of that OHV fund to use for other park purposes. So we'll see if that continues in the future.
Matt Weiser, again with us from the state capitol, environmental reporter for the Sacramento Bee, who broke this story. Congratulations on doing that, and thank you so much for being with us, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll continue hearing from you, our listeners. Let me go to a caller in San Rafael. Steve, join us.
Yes, good morning. I'm on the board of the Friends of China Camp, and I just wanted to say that we were saddened and disheartened to learn of the $54 million in state funds that are sitting with state parks. You know, Friends of China Camp worked so hard over the last 6 months to raise $250,000 to keep the park open. We were able to do that only with the strong support of our community. So we're going ahead with our plan. We're enthusiastic about being a park operator at China Camp, but we are also hoping that some of that state money will find its way back to parks like ours, which face severe financial burdens. We have a $250,000 a year operating cost that we have to meet, so that we hope that some of that money will find its way back to us. The final thing I want to say is that we would not have been able to enter into this operating agreement without the very strong support and hard work of our local California State Park workers. They're as much interested in keeping our park open as anyone, and we want to thank them and make it clear that while there is a scandal at the top, there's some really dedicated California State Park workers all throughout the system.
Well, good luck to you, Steve, and thank you for your call. Good to hear from you this morning. We'll hear next from a caller in Brentwood. Michael, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, what kind of investigation should this trigger? Because the one thing, and maybe I missed it, that I don't hear people talking about is not only is management either on the take or incompetent, But doesn't the Park and Recreations Department have to undergo an audit like other agencies? And why didn't the auditors catch this? Is the government going to fire those auditors and get new auditors? Were the auditors in bed with Parks and Recreation and didn't report this on purpose? I mean, I'd like to hear if any of the participants know the answers to those questions or what's going to happen. I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that call. Can you help us here, Elizabeth Goldstein? I mean, what about the auditors? There's going to be an audit now, rest assured.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be an audit now. I can't speak to what the standard operating practices are of the department. I'm sorry I can't do that, but I don't know. But I do think that this, obviously, the situation calls for a more regular and routinized investigation into the way fund balances work and how they get transferred to the Department of Finance. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there's clearly a big question about why the Department of Finance didn't catch this earlier on and come back and figure out what the discrepancy was. So I think that there's a lot of, at a minimum, there's holes in the system that need to be closed up. Clearly, that's going to be important in terms of establishing a process going forward that all of us as citizens can be confident that our tax dollars are being stewarded in the way that they should be.
Any thoughts from you on this, Bob Berman?
Yeah, I don't really understand, you know, the whole audit process of the state of California, so I can't really comment other than to say, again, I think, you know, in terms of the issue of public confidence, there needs to be that type of clear audit and transparency for those of us at the local level who want to make sure that as the money, you know, the money that's there that is dedicated to state parks is going to be properly used for state parks.
There's a listener named Ellis who writes, "This is really scandalous. In light of our budget woes and inability to tax corporations and the super rich at a progressive rate, how is it possible that every state department is not being audited every year?" And Oren says, "How can the director who resigned say she inherited this budget mishap? Wasn't she director since 2003? No, she was. Yes, she was, but this goes back 12 years. So, again, it's before her tenure. But Lynn in Oakland writes, "I'm wondering if there are state park workers who were laid off because of lack of funds who now might have a legal claim. Could this cost big bucks in legal fees?" Let me go to more of your calls. We'll go to Los Gatos next. Tom, join us.
Hey, great show, Mike and Michael, and thanks for taking my call. I've been lobbying personally for decades to have more minorities, especially African-American, African-American women as rangers, not just, you know, aides or maintenance people, but at Big Basin, my favorite park, about 15 years ago, they finally did hire a beautiful young African-American woman to be a ranger, but she only lasted a few months, and I checked afterwards with one of the park aides and asked what the problem was, and the park aide told me that everyone was complaining about this African-American woman, you know, jumping ahead of some Caucasian males, and so that's why she was fired or replaced or sent down the line somewhere. But anyway, I was wondering, are minorities, especially African-Americans and African-American women, equally represented now in our state parks? I sure haven't noticed any representation at all in my favorite parks here in Santa Cruz County and San Mateo counties. It seems to be just based on cronyism, and I suspect that there's a lot of connection between the pot growers and the rangers, too, like, you know, Yosemite. You know, about 15 years ago, they fired a bunch of rangers and park aides, Camp Curry employees for, you know, having pot operations all over the Yosemite Park. So I think the cronyism is the worst thing over the money scandal. And I think if they're connected, I think anyone who would, you know, squirrel away, you know, public monies for their own benefit would also be racist and sexist.
Well, we don't know if it was for their own benefit. In fact, the motive remains at this point, frankly, in the dark. But Elizabeth Goldstein, what about the question Tom's raising about minorities in state parks and the hiring of minorities? Can you shed some light?
I'm afraid I don't know what the counts are internally in terms of the department's workforce at the moment. That's a question that needs to be addressed to the department.
Okay, let me thank Tom, and we'll see what we can find out. In the meantime, I want to go to some of your web comments. Mike writes, how could this not affect people's votes for the upcoming tax measures? And it should. Personally, I can't vote for higher taxes until I feel that the state handles money responsibly. The two most recent stories to come out of the legislature, a high-speed train between two relatively low population areas, and now this, make me wonder if anyone in Sacramento cares about how our public funds are spent. And Willie writes, in the wake of the additional funds, will camping fees be reduced back to a reasonable amount? Camping fees have doubled in the past couple of years and now are often $25 to $40 a night, unaffordable for many of us. Elizabeth Goldstein, can you shed some?
Well, I think we all hope that, as I indicated a little bit earlier, that the legislature is going to rededicate this funding that was in the State Park and Recreation Fund, as Matt pointed out, to state parks to be used for keeping parks open, lowering fees, doing all the things it needs to do to produce a service that really reaches the public and Californians and our visitors. I think jury's out about how this is going to play out, but clearly that's one of the things that should be on everyone's list to see how that happens and whether or not the services to the public, in fact, can be improved, at least on the short term, with this re-infusion of funds that have been set aside for so long. I want to come back to the fact that the structural budget issues around state parks just are not going to be in any long-term way mitigated, even if that were to be the case. If the legislature decides to reinvest the $20.3 million that was in the State Park and Recreation Fund back into the department, it will certainly help in the short term. But it's not going to mitigate for the fact that the department has, you know, one-third less money in its general fund and $1.3 billion of deferred maintenance. And that is a structural question that has yet to be addressed.
Yeah, I have a listener here who writes on our website, does this mean all our parks will remain open? No, not necessarily. I mean, that's
correct, unfortunately.
Getting all kinds of comments from listeners. Robert from Oakland writes, as your guest just pointed out, the issue of government malfeasance, while dramatic, still leaves in place the ongoing shortfall of government funding, with well-intentioned people in the private sector stepping in with their own funding and volunteer labor. This is a dangerous pattern that plays right into the hands of those who wish to end public shared responsibility for schools, jails, weather prediction, parks, you name it. Instead, we must instead help educate our neighbors to insist on adequate public funding through higher taxes, particularly on the wealthy. Claire from Hayward says, Clain from San Francisco says, as a lifelong user of California public parks, I'm only hoping one thing. This previously concealed surplus will allow more parks to stay open and in good condition. And one more thing, you can bet I'll be watching this agency and its work closely. Another email comes from listeners. How can California state parks not have soap in their bathrooms? Any other facility would be closed down for failure to provide soap. Would it cost more than 10 cents per person to provide soap? You hear these kind of complaints all the time, don't you?
Absolutely. And that's what makes, from the small to the profound and enormous, this hidden funds all the more inexplicable.
More calls. Kathleen, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have noticed the allocation of funds has not been something that I think is really, really what we all want. For instance, they're doing a lot of clear cutting on the side of the highways and building sound walls. And I would think in a budget crisis time that that's something that they should have put on the back burner or maybe not done at all. We've had the greenery on the side of the highways for years and years, and it's been beautiful. And now with the clear cutting, it's just made graffiti walls out of the sound walls. So I don't think it's the best allocation of funds, especially at this time.
Okay. Anybody want to comment, Bob, or
Well, I would like to just go back to something earlier that Elizabeth was mentioning. In terms of, although this is a large sums of money, it clearly doesn't change the structural problems that we have with state parks. And certainly, in terms of the Benicia State Capitol, even before the closure, the hours of operation were greatly reduced. That state park now is only open 2 days a week. And so the issue in terms of how do we develop a long-term operating plan for state parks, and how do local communities like ourselves, we've gone through, and again I would point out that we've gone through a an effort to raise money for the operation of the two state parks, but we've only raised, even now, money for 1 year of operation. So we now have to, we'll have to go back and look at the second and the third year. And so those issues of long-term operation, maintenance, the deferred maintenance, continue. And I think we really do need to focus on how do we resolve that long-term problem.
Well, what's the figure I keep seeing, Elizabeth, for deferred maintenance? It's well over $1 billion.
Yeah, $1.3 billion. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, it's really important to focus on the places and the people of state parks, that these are incredible resources that we as Californians should have access to and continued access to, and that all of us, despite this tragic oversight of these hidden funds, need to figure out some way to pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off and keep fighting to protect these amazing places.
Let me bring Bob on while we have a little bit of time. Bob, go ahead. Bob from Grass Valley, are you there? Well, he's not there. I was just going to talk about the importance of State Farms as an asset, which would have been a good way to conclude here. I'm sorry I couldn't get to a number of callers and emails and web comments, but I thank, and Facebook comments, but I thank all of you for participating. And also thank our guests, Matt Weiser, who was with us earlier, environmental reporter for the Sacramento Bee, who joined us from Sacramento, and Elizabeth Goldstein here in studio, who is president of the California State Parks Foundation, and Bob Berman, vice president of the Benicia State Parks Association. We will obviously continue to cover this story, and it is an important story, not only in terms of the ongoing structural problems with state parks and the revelations about all of this money, surplus money, and why it wasn't audited the way it should have been or why it wasn't called to public attention earlier, but also questions about how this is going to affect other state agencies, and particularly the tax ballot measure that is up on, well, there are two of them, but I'm thinking particularly of Governor Brown's. At any rate, thank you for being with us this hour of Forum, another one coming your way, and we want to thank our staff. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Judy Campbell and Vinnie Tong. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And the music you hear on Forum is from Mike Marshall. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.